So the last presentation before the break is mine, and I'm changing amendments. If you see it, it says enhancing, you may see in your program, enhancing urban stormwater function with amendments to reduce stormwater runoff and quality, and I'm going to focus my amendments solely on compost. Oops. There we go. Okay, so we've heard numerous times today about the negative effects of urbanization on soil functioning and stormwater quality. First most is probably just removal of organic matter containing topsoil, which provides a great medium for plant growth, and now typically that's gone. After that, the disturbed soils typically have no structure and they're very compact. In addition, urbanization leads to large amounts of impervious surfaces so that the small amounts of poorly functioning soil we have cannot even make up for all of the impervious soils. So with compost, we have an organic product here that makes a potentially great product for reducing runoff and erosion. It's a Class A material, meaning it's low it's no pathogens in it. It's treated to kill pathogens, and to be used in this way, it has to be low in pollutants such as heavy metals. The value of compost in our urban disturbed soils is: one, maintenance of surface soil aggregation, so that would result in preventing of surface sealing and increasing infiltration. It can reduce bulk density in the area of the soil, the volume of the soil that it's incorporated, which would increase porosity and increase hydraulic conductivity. By increasing soil organic matter, we're also increasing water holding capacity of that soil and providing a slow release source of nutrients. And these soil properties make it easier to establish vegetation and growth for nutrients, cation exchange, and buffering the pH. So I'd like to share with you some of my own research and then summarize some other research on two areas. Number one, how organic matter and compost improves soil for plant establishment and growth. And then secondly, how it may improve soil to reduce runoff and erosion. So one study we recently published is in Lynchburg, Virginia, on a degraded urban soil. After all the topsoil was removed, there was the landscapers were unable to establish vegetation for years by coming in and applying fertilizer year after year and applying lime. We used a compost that was created from a paper mill sludge and woody waste material, and we could see the concentrations of the attributes there in the bottom left. And we applied these materials onto the soil surface, aerovated them into the soil, seeded and rolled, and we planted a combination of various tall fescue plants. This shows the various treatments that we incorporated in our project, starting from the left and moving to the right. 5 centimeter depth of compost pre-planted incorporated, then 2 centimeters of compost pre-planted incorporated. If you go all the way to the right, 2.5 centimeters of compost applied as a blanket, not incorporated, and seeded directly into that. In the center, we had two treatments in which we fertilized according to standard cooperative extension soil test lab requirements. One, we just fertilized, did nothing, and planted, did nothing else. The other plot, we split, applied fertilizer, and then we either on half of it used the typical straw mat that landscapers often use to help grass seed germinate. The other half we decided to experiment with a quarter inch of compost as a blanket in lieu of the straw mat. This table shows our nutrients that were applied by treatment. The first row shows the fertilizer recommendations for establishing this grass. Of course, in inorganic fertilizer, there's no carbon applied, and you see the right rates of N, P, and K. The following rows show the amounts of carbon, N, P, and K, that were supplied by the rates of the compost. So right away you see that we're applying organic matter or carbon up to 25 megagrams per hectare of carbon. But what we also see here, what we also see if you look at the nitrogen columns is that there's significantly more nitrogen being applied by the compost than is needed by the plants. Of course, when you realize that compost nitrogen is probably only about 10% available, that we see that the 2.5 centimeter depth rate was probably supplying the similar to the fertilized rate, with the 5 centimeter depth applying about twice that amount. The nutrient of great concern would be phosphorus, because this phosphorus is readily available and we're applying very heavy rates in the compost material. So that's a potential caveat or warning about how to about using compost in these lands. So if we look at the effects, the initial year of the different treatments on the turf biomass, we see that within the month or two of planting, in fact, that the fertilizer treatments gave us the highest biomass, followed by the three compost rates. And then as the season went on, in the middle of the season around July, when the grass growth slows down, there were no differences in biomass. But in the early fall, late summer, early fall, when cool season grass again begins to grow, now we get an inverse of the initial, the slow release form of nitrogen coming from the compost pushes it to the top of the production, and the inorganic fertilizer down to the bottom. After 2 years of with only occasional applications of only nitrogen fertilizer, we found that the best yield, the best density and quality was achieved with the highest rate of compost, followed by the 2.5 centimeter depth of the compost, and that was followed by the standard fertilizer treatment. And the advantages we can see in the table at the bottom: total organic carbon from the fertilized plots was about 12 grams per kilogram, rose to about 28 with the 2.5 centimeter rate of compost, and to 32 grams per kilogram with the 5 centimeter rate of compost. Bulk density was not bad to begin with, but still at the higher rate of compost, we did see a significant decrease in bulk density. What was encouraging was in these high iron soils, despite the high rates of phosphorus, our malic 1 extractable soil test phosphorus did not rise into an excessive P rate, excessive P zone. It was increased in concentration, but not to a level where we'd be concerned about phosphorus runoff impairing surface water. And there have been numerous other studies, which I've listed here, a couple studies by Harrison et al., several by Pinamonti, and Shralapur actually published a survey of about 21 different studies in the U.S. using various types of compost, MSW, yard waste, and biosolids compost at different rates, and showed tremendous improvements in number one, soil organic matter by up to 163%, water holding capacity almost 1.5 times, 143%. Pinamonti actually measured increases in plant available water, and that was 6 to 9%. Bulk density decreased in absolute terms 0.4 to 0.6 grams per cubic centimeter. Shralapur found a decrease up to 71%, and we saw they also showed increases in porosity. Now I'd like to move to the away from the plant establishment and maintenance, and actually look at the effects of runoff and erosion. This is actually a natural soil, not a disturbed soil. It's at a research station in Virginia in Orange, but it's a highly eroded soil, a Piedmont soil, bristling with iron oxides. And our treatments in this were five consecutive annual applications of either composted yard waste, poultry litter, or inorganic fertilizer at the agronomic rate, and then a control treatment in which we added nothing. After 5 years of these annual amendments, we see, as we expect, a significant increase in organic carbon in the top 10 centimeters, with the compost being significantly higher than the other three treatments. We did see significant increases in total and malic 3 phosphorus and water-soluble phosphorus. And the concentrations of malic 3 and water-soluble phosphorus with the five annual applications of compost might have elicited a concern had we not then stumbled upon the next data I'm about to show you. So we employed rainfall simulation on these studies, on these sites, after the 5 years of annual application. This was the rainfall simulation that was done or designed by the phosphorus, National Phosphorus Testing Program, in which we would rain on the sites until runoff began, and then we would rain on it at 7.5 centimeters per hour for an additional 30 minutes. We collected all of the solution that ran off the site. Here we can see the results of the amount of water that ran off and the amount of water that infiltrated. First, in the dark green bars at the bottom, the dark green parts of the bar at the bottom, that the compost by far was significantly higher than all of the other treatments in the amount of water that infiltrated, and followed by poultry litter with fertilizer and control treatments being about the same. And because so much more water infiltrated into these plots, there was less runoff after that time. So the compost was the winner with the least amount of water that ran off, followed by the poultry litter, and then the control and the fertilizer were similar. So because the amount of pollutant load that would move to surface water is a product of both the concentration of the pollutant in the water and the volume of the pollutant in the water, we can see that the total loads actually were not increased by compost, but they were decreased despite the fact that there were higher concentrations of pollutant in the runoff water because of the higher surface soil concentrations of N and P. So total suspended solids, the compost produced the least amount, with the litter, the fertilizer, the control increasing. Total Keldol N, again, compost had the least amount of TKN leaving the site with litter, fertilizer, and control. And then for the phosphorus, which we were somewhat concerned about because of the very high soluble phosphorus in the site, we had the least amount by far of phosphorus in the runoff water leaving the site. So the bottom line is you must not just think about the concentrations of pollutants, in this case N and P, that you are applying, amending the soil with, but what physical benefits these amendments might have that might reduce runoff and therefore reducing the load. There have been numerous other compost studies from Iowa State, Washington State, and Wisconsin that have been have explored the use of compost either as a blanket or incorporated to various depths and rates on a variety of soils. And some of these studies were rainfall simulation, where the water raining on the site was carefully monitored and carefully applied, for example, 10 centimeters per hour for 30 minutes. And some of these were actually natural rainfall events. So we have both simulated rainfall and natural rainfall events. But the key importance here is if the bottom row showing the volumetric reduction of runoff from compost amended soils as compared to the compost unamended soils, soils that were fertilized, bare soils, sometimes soils in which topsoil was reapplied. And the reduction in runoff was anywhere from 26% to almost 100%, 99%. So we're seeing other people showing very similar kinds of benefits. So in conclusion, we see that organic matter improves soil properties and enhances vegetation establishment. However, we had initial concern that these high compost rates may increase a nutrient such as phosphorus to such an extent that you would get excessive high P concentrations in the runoff. However, the drastic improvements in these soil physical properties with the addition of this organic matter, increased infiltration, increased water holding capacity, hydraulic conductivity, so that there was a subsequent reduction in the amount of sediment, nitrogen, and phosphorus that were leaving these sites. I'd like to end with some future research needs. We can go through the literature and we can find all these benefits, but there's some value that we need to, or additional quantitative results that we need to determine. So we need to help understand when we're applying compost, different types of compost at different rates and different methodologies, what's the effect through a range of these on infiltration, conductivity, runoff, and then pollutant transport, particularly sediment, nitrogen, and phosphorus. These are important because with our water quality models, in order to give credit to certain practices, BMPs, we need to be able to quantify these practices and what sort of credits that we can give for the incorporation of compost into these pervious soils. So some of the aspects that we need to better understand are the sources of compost, that is, what are the feedstocks, and the compositions are different. Everything from biosolids and manures, which have high N and P, to yard waste, which is relatively low in N and P. But also understanding that biosolids, products like biosolids, are enhanced with iron that have been used for phosphorus removal, and therefore the pea and biosolids composts may be less soluble than the pea and animal composts. The rate that we need to apply, at what point do we start to get a limitation in how much you can spend on compost? We can apply 4, 5, 6 inches of compost, but it may be economically unfeasible, and if 1 or 2 inches is fine, then that's what we should stick with. The depth of incorporation. So we know that the water holding capacity basically is improved and the hydraulic conductivity in the zone in which that compost is applied. So typically we're applying an in-tilling compost into 4 and 6 inches. Some studies have actually suggested tilling it in deep row chiseling to 18 inches, 24 inches, so that you can actually break up the subsoil and get more water movement, and that would even increase infiltration and reduce runoff even more. And then the application frequency. The organic matter in compost, while stabilized, will continue to degrade and decompose, and so how often do we need to come back and add more compost in order to maintain an ideal soil profile? And then all these should be analyzed over effects of various rainfall events in duration and frequency and intensity vary throughout the United States and other countries, so this is important for modeling purposes too. And so with that, I don't know if there's time for some questions. Okay, good. I was hoping there would be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great question, and one that not only Maryland but other states are dealing with. And the gist of it is because compost contains phosphorus, turf grass and other soils that may already be loaded with phosphorus would only increase the potential for pea runoff by application of them. And the only way I know that we can get to the regulators about this is to be able to share with them these research results. We have regulators in Virginia who are very open to looking at our research results and using those results to help inform the regulation. Where some other states are sort of knee-jerk reactions, you know, less pea means less runoff, even though these soils would, you saw our control, nothing added, and because there was nothing added, not even fertilizer, there wasn't as vigorous as plant growth through the year, so the amount of root biomass was less, and that's the reason for some of the decreased properties, physical and chemical properties in the control soil. So it's simply a matter of being able to speak to the regulators and be able to share these data with them. But it is it's an excellent question.
Dr. Bono, let's get at this topic. In your study where you looked at 5 years of compost application, you talked about TP and TKM loads. I'm curious about things like SRP and the dissolved fraction of phosphorus nitrogen. Is that often more bioavailable and is it a spur for things like that?
Right. So we did fractionate our solutions into various forms of phosphorus and nitrogen. I chose, for time's sake, only to focus on that was in basically the total fraction, which is a combination of the soluble, very soluble, and a combination of that was particulate bound, and it followed the same trend. I didn't show you the concentrations in the runoff, and the concentrations in the runoff of the compost were the same or slightly higher than some of the others. But again, if you reduce the total amount that's running off, you're going to you can, and we did, reduce the load. We didn't in our study, but there's the darkening of the soil, the absorption of the heat, and numerous people have talked about getting plants established earlier because in the season with compost. If you're holding more water, you're going to hold the temperature of that water, so there's some thermal, but that's not something we didn't measure that. Is there something about those properties that you see of some integration into the stormwater?
I don't know, that's why I asked.
I don't know the question, I ask the questioner. When I don't know the answer, I try to turn it around.
But, what about the hydrophobic properties of some sort of compost?
Yeah, that is true, and that seems to be more of an issue where you're applying compost as a blanket on the soil surface, where water may hit it and be shed. We would love to see water hit that compost, move through blankets and down into the soil. Once it's incorporated into the soil, we didn't look to see how much water is actually absorbed by the compost versus how much was absorbed by the compost soil system. But some types of compost, particularly those from woody materials with a lot of heavy lignin in them, tend to be more hydrophobic and take more time to wet up. All right, so if that's it for the questions, we have a 15-minute break scheduled, so we'll start up again at 10 o'clock. Thank you.